Brad, joining us in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chairs this morning, and it's quite an honor. It's an honor for me to be surrounded by vets. Brad Davis, we all know, is a veteran, but joining us today, Richard Kolb. Richard is a longtime publisher and editor-in-chief of VFW Magazine and author of the book Brutal Battles of Vietnam, America's Deadliest Days, 1965 to 1972, as I said, a Vietnam War vet. Joining us in studio, Art Wicknick, a Vietnam War vet, Connecticut, author of the book Namesense, and some of his other works have appeared in other compendiums. So we're honored to have both Richard and Art on Brad and Dan. Gentlemen, good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi there, Dan.
Yeah. Richard, we're going to start. Great to have you on the program. We're going to start with you, Richard. How long did it take you to put together this enormous and very interesting book?
It probably took over 10 years when we add up all the time we invested in it. We began it as a magazine series, and there was such a great interest among our readers that we decided to turn it into a book around 2008. So we began compiling accounts at a greater rate in 2009, and the beauty of the book is that it's told by the guys that were actually there, so that's one of its greatest selling points.
You know, I'm holding the book now. It's got to weigh at least 10 pounds, and just thumbing through it, it's magnificent. I mean, a coffee table anywhere. It's an unbelievable book.
Well, thank you. We just wanted to make sure that it was comprehensive, and we wanted to get everybody's stories told as best we could.
All right, I know you've been talking to Richard. Say hello and ask him a question.
Well, Richard, I want to thank you again for coming on with us. And I also want to thank you for mentioning me in the book on the Battle of Hamburger Hill. And one of the things you and I have talked on the phone before privately is, while the Hamburger Hill battle was going on, which was a 10-day battle that took 66 American lives, there was also a battle only a couple of miles away on a fire base called Airborne, which claimed 28 American lives. Now, while these two battles were going on, and before I got involved with Hamburger Hill, I was on stand down at a place called Eagle Beach. So I was at a picnic while these poor guys were getting the crap kicked out of them, and I have always felt guilty about that. And but you had mentioned that that's just one of the fortunes of war. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, a lot of people don't really have a full understanding of how the war in Vietnam was waged. Unlike World War II, and even to a certain extent Korea, most of the battles in Vietnam were small scale. They were small unit actions. And the Americans that were killed generally died in single digits, maybe 5, 6, 8 at a time. And of course, they added up to a large number. But when you start looking at battles, for instance, where 30 or more Americans were killed in a single action, there were only 55 of those. So, for instance, Hamburger Hill, where 66 Americans were killed, it was a multiple-day battle. And it was the eighth worst among multiple day battles, but there were other ones that were single day, and often the actions only last hours or even minutes in some cases. And the worst one was in the Idrang Valley in 1965, where 153 Americans were killed in a matter of hours. But just to reemphasize, that was the exception. That was not the norm to have, there weren't big battles like the Battle of Okinawa or Battle of the Bulge or that type of thing in Vietnam.
You know, Richard, one of the things that I will never forget, I was out in San Francisco, and I'll never forget when I saw some veterans that were coming home from Nam, and they went into the men's room. I had just come out of the men's room, and they walked into the, they had uniforms on, went into the men's room, and came out in civvies because of what the American public, some in the American public, would say to them. I mean, and after you have just described what you've described, and I knew this, can you imagine? I mean, what they went through, what all of you went through. Unbelievable.
Well, you know, I'm glad you said some, because, you know, in certain circles that was definitely the case. But I think if you look at the vast majority of guys that served in Vietnam were from the lower middle class and working class. And, you know, about every instance that I can think of, their fathers were World War II veterans or at least Korean War veterans. And in their towns, you know, in their communities, there may not have been gargantuan parades or anything like that, but I still think the vast majority were well received by their own families. And despite all the publicity that was heaped upon those that opposed the war and may have actually extended that opposition to the guys that actually served there, I still believe that the majority of the public backed us, but they just weren't vocal in that backing, and they didn't get the publicity for it.
But it was terrible for me to see, being a former Marine. It just tore my heart out.
They did generally tell us when we came back, you're better off taking your uniform off as quick as you can, because you don't want to attract unwarranted attention. But I think a lot of guys probably ignored that and said that if somebody wanted to bring that unwarranted attention on them, they were ready to deal with it. So it is a shame, though, that had to even come up in the conversation.
Okay. Well, Richard, we're going to pick up on that point, and Art as well, but I know, Brad, we're coming up on a traffic update.
Okay, 18 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock in the morning, and let's check out the traffic, see how the bumper-to-bumper crowd's doing. Cindy, good morning again, and how does it look?
Good morning, Brad. We've got bumper-to-bumper traffic, 84 westbound, exits 56 for Governor Street into Sigourney Street, eastbound types from Route 9 in Farmington into I-91, northbound 91 past exit 37 for Bloomfield Avenue, has the right lane locked up with a crash, delays back to 291, and southbound bumper-to-bumper traffic into I-84, delays start at Park Avenue. Wilbur Cross Parkway southbound, only one lane is getting by at West Rock Tunnel because of an unauthorized tractor trailer. There are heavy delays back to Whitney Avenue in Hamden. And also 91 South has been extra busy as you head into New Haven because of a crash in the right lane now at the 95 and Route 34 merge. And this report is brought to you by Unbound.org. Just like kids here, children across the world have big dreams for their future. Give one child the opportunity for a better tomorrow at Unbound.org. I'm Cindy Waitman, back at 8:34 with your last traffic check on the Talk of Connecticut.
19 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock, we're going to get back to two very special guests in just a moment and an incredible story. Say, you know, so many of you have visited one of my favorite spots since I've been talking about New Balance shoes, and that's Evergreen Walk in South Windsor and the Avon Marketplace at 380 West Main Street, Route 44 in Avon. Michael DeCibio, who put this business together and is so successful because he has come up with a special shoe, New Balance 928 shoes, and once you get a pair, I've got three pair already. Dan's got a pair, and it's just incredible. That roll bar design, foot and ankle protection, a roomier toe box, it's all there for you. And again, for the entire family. For example, he has got some of the greatest collection of sneakers that you have ever seen. In fact, when people go in, they say, what an immense inventory. Running, walking, tennis, soccer, whatever you need in the way of shoes. You just can't go wrong. And I'll tell you, the folks that he has hired, they don't let you out of there until you're happy. And this is the reason he's so successful. So again, if you haven't got your New Balance shoes yet, you got to get a pair. You really, really do. Evergreen Walk, South Windsor, the Avon Marketplace out there in Avon.
Brad Beck with us, and this is a very special program. And if you'd like to join in and call, you can at 888-574-2723. Two Vietnam War vets and two authors. Richard Kolb, the author of the book Brutal Battles of Vietnam, America's Deadliest Days, 1965 to 1972. And Art Wicknick from Connecticut, author of the book Namsense. And we were talking about when Vietnam War vets returned home from Vietnam. And Art, you were about to make a statement.
When I came home, I was also told to take my uniform off, but I wasn't going to. I figured in Connecticut, people are going to welcome me. Well, I was wrong. And when I arrived at Bradley Airport, I was the only person in uniform. And so I'm walking through the terminal and didn't think much of it at first. But then people started looking at me and kind of like nodding, not like, hey, look, a veteran. It was like, hey, look, a veteran. And I can kind of sense that they weren't happy to see me. And then other people, when I make eye contact, they look away. And so I knew that, you know, this isn't a good situation. So I went and found a spot to sit down. And as I waited for my ride, other people came into that location and sat down as well. And as all the seats filled up, no one would sit next to me. They said,
they're kidding me.
On my left and on my right,
wow,
those two chairs were left vacant. And people sat on the floor to sit next to me while I was in uniform. I was heartbroken. It was, you know, no one said anything. You know, I wasn't spit on or heckled or anything like that. But this was just as bad, just to be ignored, like I had some kind of a plague or something. So when I got home, the first thing I did is I got out of that uniform. I didn't want to be seen in it.
Wow. And you know, Brad, and Richard Dart was a guest speaker at one of our dinners with Dan years ago. He told that story, and you could hear a pin drop. That's how silent and sad the audience was.
Terrible. I get tears in my eyes when I think about it.
Now, Richard, you chose, when you put this book together, you chose to keep the politics out of it. Explain why.
Yeah, 100%. First of all, there's been so many books written on the political and diplomatic aspects of the war that we stayed away from that completely. It just wasn't necessary to get into that. This book really is one of a kind because no one has ever compiled all in a single volume a complete combat history of Vietnam, and we wanted to make sure that the complete coverage was on the guys that did the fighting, and by injecting political aspects into it, it would just take up space to begin with, but it just wasn't important from our perspective because this is all about what the individual guys did, what they experienced, how they felt about what they were doing. So we felt like when the end product came out, we had accomplished that to a great degree, and we've gotten a great reception among our fellow Vietnam veterans. They're very grateful that for the first time in many cases, the story of their battle's been told.
Well, one of the things that really stands out to me, Richard, is the number of young Americans killed. For instance, in May, one week in May of 1968, 543 young Americans lost their lives. And if you compare that to today's actions, you know, there is no comparison. You know, families are still devastated. If one soldier gets killed, a family is still devastated. But I can't imagine 543 young men in 1 week.
Yeah, it is amazing when you put it in perspective of nowadays. And it is nice that the media during the Iraq and Afghanistan war did give a lot of coverage and put focus on the individual casualties, because we do like to see that for the benefit of the families. But as you bring up, it really dwarfs. For example, in Afghanistan, with all the years we were there, there were only two firefights where we had even close to 10 Americans killed. In one, there were 8, and one, there were 9. And that's amazing when you stop and think that we've been there for 16 years. In Vietnam, during the peak years, to have 8 or 9 guys killed in a single firefight was all too common. So there is quite a difference between Vietnam and Iraq and Afghanistan in that respect. But, you know, after saying that, I'm glad to see that the public has bestowed a lot of recognition and respect on the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans, and that's a big change, I think.
Tremendous now. Tremendous.
That is one of the things that really makes me feel proud. When I, I'm getting choked up thinking about it. Because when I came home, I could not wear my uniform. And when I see young men and women today in uniform, I feel like that's my homecoming. So I get homecomings all the time. when I see these young men and women in uniform. And plus, they're the one, these young men and women today are the ones who volunteer. I was drafted. I would have never enlisted in a million years. So these people today, all they do, they go out there, they do three or four deployments, and I can't say enough good things about them. They're really a special breed.
Well, I had an interesting experience in that regard. Two of my sons were in the Marine Corps, and I was at the airport with my youngest son one day, and several people on different occasions came up to him when they saw him in his Marine uniform, and they thanked him for doing his time, and he was embarrassed by it. You know, he just didn't really feel the need to have all the attention focused on him, but I had to say to him that you better take it while you can get it, because it may not last that long, and it hasn't always been the case. So it really has been a pleasant experience to witness that.
And now, Richard, were these all the battles that were in the book, Brutal Battles of Vietnam, or was there a certain criteria which had to be met in order to make the book?
Yes, we definitely established a criteria, because with as long as the war lasted, we just couldn't get everything covered. So what we did is, if a battle fought between 1965 and 1969 incurred about 25 to 30 Americans killed, we included it. When you got to the latter part of 69 through 72, then it was about 20. So the important thing to remember that whenever you got into double digits in Vietnam near the end of the war, that was an important battle from that standpoint, from an individual action. But I think, too, what's gotten lost here in the history of the war is that a lot of people seem to think that the war ended on July 7th, 1969, when we first started to withdraw troops. But that wasn't the case at all. A good example is if you look at the annual statistics of the number of Americans killed, the number of GIs killed in 1970 versus the number in 1966, for instance, was almost identical. It was only like 0.3% difference in the loss in lives. So because of the decline in media coverage, a lot of people are really ignorant of what took place in the latter stages of the war.
Well, again, this book, there's no question about it. Once people see it, and I'm looking at it right now, they're going to want this. This is a treasure.
Well, Richard's going to be with us, and Art's going to be with us after the break at the bottom of the hour. But before we go to break, Richard, how can people pick up a copy of the book?
Probably the best way to do it is to go directly to the VFW, because the VFW sponsored the book. And you can order it by dialing 1-800-821-2606 and simply ask for item number 4767, and they'll mail it directly to you.
Go ahead, 1-800, go again,
1-800-821-2606 and ask for item number 4767.
And, Art, how can somebody pick up a copy of Namsense? It's still in print, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah. In fact, now that you mention that, we're going into a fourth printing. It's going to come out in a small, airport-size paperback.
Great.
So it's still selling and selling well, so I'm very proud of that. That's on Amazon. I also have a website, namsense.com.
Okay.
We're going to be right back after the news. Don't go away. These are heroes, my friends. These are heroes.
Fox News Radio, I'm Chris Foster. It's back to school for students at Stoneman Douglas High 2 weeks after 17 people died in a shooting there.
I'm just glad to see everybody that I spent the hard time with and see that they're all okay.
It's a half day all week just to get kids back into the swing of things. The building where the shootings happened will not be used. It's being torn down. The president's son-in-law and advisor, Jared Kushner, loses his top-secret security clearance.
Press Secretary Sarah Sanders says Kushner will remain on the job.
He's a valued member of the team, and he will continue to do the important work that he's been doing since he started in the administration.
President Trump has the power to grant his son-in-law a permanent clearance, but has said he would leave that decision in the hands of his chief of staff, John Kelly. Kushner is among a number of West Wing staffers with downgraded clearances.
Fox's Rachel Sutherland in Washington. Fox News. We report, you decide.
The workmen in Torrington remind us that respect and care for our senior citizens should always be a priority in our society. We owe much of today's success to our seniors because of their hard work and sacrifice. During National Older Americans Month, let us remember our seniors and wish them well. That's courtesy of the workmen, 244 Forest Street in Torrington. They're always working to keep our community moving in a positive direction. Call 860-482-0016 for more information. The Workmen of Torrington.
It's after New Year's. You've waited this long. Now is the time to sell your home. Start fresh and get rid of the burden of mortgages. Is your agent ineffective? Sell directly. Save costs. Sell to My House Buyer Direct. No commission. Sell as is and get cash. Sitting on a property you haven't sold? Now's the time to sell. Call 860-325-SOLD. MyHouseBuyer.com. Sell your home hassle-free with no commissions, a cash offer within 24 hours, and closing when you want it. Free consultation. 860-325-SOLD. MyHouseBuyer.com.
Get social with us. The Talk of Connecticut is all over social media, and we want you to join us. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and check out our pictures on Instagram.
Just find Talk of CT, and that's us.
Get your news and information from the Talk of Connecticut on your phone, iPad, and desktop. Look for the Talk of Connecticut all over your news feed.
Internet.
This is Connecticut's Home for Talk.
Start your commute with Brad Davis.
And drive home with Michael Savage.
The Talk of Connecticut.
The Talk of Connecticut. Bouvier Insurance Traffic.
Good morning. If you're taking a ride on 84, we've got bumper-to-bumper traffic eastbound from Route 9 in Farmington into I-91. Westbound slammed Governor Street to Sigourney Street. Two westbounds out of crawl through Glastonbury. More types into the Founders Bridge. Northbound 91 past exit 37 for Bloomfield Avenue. A crash has the right lane out. And southbound delays are from Park Avenue into I-84. Then down by I-95, we've got the right lane out with a crash. And delays go back through exit 9 in North Haven. Wolvercross Parkway South, that earlier tractor trailer has been escorted off by the West Rock Tunnel, but there are residual delays remaining back to Whitney Avenue in Hamden. I'm Cindy Waitman with your traffic check on the Talk of Connecticut.
News, weather, traffic, politics with Brad and Dan. This is the Brad and Dan Show on the Talk of Connecticut.
8:34, my friends, and two very, very special guests as you sit next to a hero, and that's what they are. They shake their heads, no, naturally. But I'll tell you, you look at this book, and I'm sure many of you will get a hold of it, will purchase it. Now, I just want to give you the telephone number. It's the VFW where you get it. In fact, they're the ones that actually got in back of this, and you're going to meet the author again in just a moment. But the number to call if you'd like a copy, okay, 1-800-821-2606. 1-800-821-2606. 4767.
Brad, back in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chairs, Richard Colby's on the line, author of the book Brutal Battles of Vietnam, America's Deadliest Days, 1965 to 1972, and in studio Art Wicknick, author of Namsense, both Vietnam veterans. I know, gentlemen, before, and it's one of the battles that's featured in the book, Hamburger Hill. Explain to our audience, first of all, how it got that name and about the battle.
Well, Hamburger Hill was on military maps was Hill 937, and as the battle progressed and more young men were killed and wounded, it became known as a meat grinder. That's how it got the name Hamburger Hill, and it was a focal point overlooking the Oshawa Valley in northern Vietnam. So with the 101st Airborne in that general area, in that general vicinity, the enemy did not want us there. But that's where the enemy was, so that's where we went after them.
Mm-hmm. Richard.
Yes.
Talk a bit about Hamburger Hill.
Well, Hamburger Hill is remembered, unfortunately, for all the wrong reasons. Immediately in May of 69, it became politicized. It became a political football. And unfortunately, lost in all that was the courage of the guys that fought there. And I think, you know, if you ask the general public if they could name, you know, just a handful of battles from the Vietnam War, it's likely that Hamburger Hill would be one of those and would probably be the last one that they'd be remembering. But it's, like I said, it's for all the wrong reasons. And there was a lot of negative publicity focused on certain aspects of it, and they just didn't understand really what the guys went through there. You know, even when they interviewed individuals, the quotes that ended up in the newspapers were generally ones that were going to fit the anti-war narrative, and that's very unfair to the guys that did their time there and did their duty, and they were proud of what they did, and I think that's what they should be remembered for to this day.
Actually, after the battle, we were sent to Firebase Airborne because it had gone through an attack during the battle. We were sent there to rebuild the firebase, and a lot of us sat around and we were kind of proud of what we did. So you're correct, and we recounted, you know, to some degree, some of the things that happened to each one of us. So soldiers do sit back and they go, "Hey, did you see what so and so did? Did you see that he was the first guy to take out that one position?" And so, you know, we kind of pat ourselves on the back a little bit, but again, the political aspect of it, whenever we read in the paper a few weeks later that Teddy Kennedy called that battle senseless and irresponsible, we were livid because so many young men died there, and he comes out with a remark like that. I can't stand even the thinking about him coming out with a remark like that on the Senate floor.
And then there was a big a big show on television
Yeah, we're going to get to that documentary, Brad. But I want to stick with the battles for just a moment because, Richard, this is the 50th anniversary of the Tet Offensive. Talk a bit about that.
Right. Yeah, the Tet Offensive is interesting. Here's another aspect of the Vietnam War that's totally misrepresented. If I constantly hear the Tet Offensive referred to as a battle, as if it was a single individual battle. And the Tet Offensive comprised hundreds of separate battles. And because of the media coverage of it, and even today when a lot of historians recount it, all the individualism of those battles has been lost. And I think that it's a disservice to the public because they're not being properly informed and educated about the war. And that's one of the purposes of this book. You know, the Americans tend to think of the Revolutionary War and the Civil War and World War II in terms of individual battles. And that's never really been the case with Vietnam, and that's one of the objectives of this book, was to kind of put some of the names of these battles on the radar screen so people can identify them. And one of the unfortunate aspects of how the military, the Marine Corps, and the Army identified battles was simply by operations, and that denied veterans of those battles the ability to recount their experiences and actions in something that in a form that people could remember. And as early as about 1966, one of the greatest historians of the war even mentioned that was probably by design. That the military is trying to obscure the actions and not reveal the degree of sacrifice in these individual battles. And hopefully we've kind of remedied that to a certain extent.
You know, it is interesting because you read about the history of the Civil War, and General Grant used to love to sit around after the war and talk about individual battles. It was never about the overall war, Richard.
Right. Yeah, that's a good example of it there. And even in the Korean War, you know, generally the public can come up with a couple battle names in the early part of the war, but probably for the last half of the Korean War, it probably set a precedent for what was to come in Vietnam, because then the public lost interest in it, the media coverage declined, you weren't hearing about individual battles, but even though it had stalemated almost to the degree it was like World War One in trench warfare, there were still a lot of distinctive battles that were fought all the way up through the war, end of the war in July 1953, but very few Americans can identify any of those.
You know, before we go on anymore, I want you yourself to go back over so that the folks that listen to this radio program can get a copy of this book, Brutal Battles of Vietnam, and just tell them how they have to go about it. I want you to do that.
It's very simple. Just simply call this toll-free number. It's 1-800-821-2606. And the book is identified with an item number, and that number is 4767. Very simple procedure. They'll get it out to you real quick-like, and you'll have it in no time. And we sales have done real well. We by the end of December, we had sold about 10,000 copies.
Wow.
And it's been reviewed by half a dozen publications, and we've been very gratified with the reviews that we've received. Every individual reviewer has understood completely what the purpose of the book was, and they've conveyed that to the readers in these various magazines, too, so we've been very pleased with that.
Richard, can you explain to our audience, and Art, pitch in here, was there a common thread through this book as far as veterans and interactions and reminiscences?
Yeah, we definitely started out on the premise that there was a lot of unrecognized courage that occurred during the Vietnam War. And we made sure that in every single chapter in the book, that was emphasized. And, you know, obviously you can do that by recounting the experiences of guys that received the Medal of Honor or Navy Cross or Distinguished Service Cross or Air Force Cross, and sometimes Silver Stars. But keep in mind, too, that a lot of times bravery was not recognized. And anybody that spent any time in the field in Vietnam or in any war, for that matter, can probably always give you examples of things guys did that were never recognized by any form of a battle. So I like to make sure that people understand that even though we mentioned by name Americans that received these various medals, it doesn't mean that there wasn't a lot of other bravery demonstrated on the battlefield.
You know, I've got page 20 that I'm looking at, and there are one Army, both Medal of Honor recipients, and with all of the description. This book is a must. There's no question about it. This is put together magnificently. And when you mentioned the medals, they're all here, and the young men, and you really realize how young they really were.
I was 20 years old. I was just a kid when I went up Hamburger Hill. And, you know, I don't think I did anything extraordinary other than just being there, but I think a lot of people who are in a combat situation, even today, you know, I think back on how lucky I was, not just to have survived, but to have known some of these guys that I fought alongside, and some of the bravery that I witnessed, because I saw guys running up that hill right towards the enemy. I would have never done that. I'm looking for a rock to get behind. You know, I don't want to get shot. But some of these guys, you know, the instincts took over. Their training kicked in. You know, I got to take the objective, and away they went. It was amazing to watch and to be part of it.
Richard, explain, and you too, Art, because you're both Vietnam War vets, the terrain, jungle-like, had to deal with snakes. Talk about the terrain of the Vietnam War.
Well, we tried to get that, make sure that came across, too, in the various chapters, because it varied. You know, you'll hear a lot of Vietnam veterans make the remark that their war was isolated, in the sense that what was going on in their area of operations was totally unrelated to those throughout the country during the war, and that's very true. I mean, if you were in the 9th Division and you were in the Mekong Delta, your environment was totally different than that of the Central Highlands or I Corps up by the DMZ, and your enemy generally was. I mean, when you're down that far south, the 9th Division, most of the opposition it encountered were Viet Cong. But when you get up towards the Central Highlands, where you have triple canopy jungle, and then you get up into the Ashaw Valley, where Art was, the terrain is you know, more jungle-like, and your enemy was generally the NVA. This is another myth that I think has been perpetuated, that, you know, the war over there was, we were fighting a bunch of guerrillas in black pajamas. And, well, they certainly played a part in it, but the majority of the big battles were fought against fully armed, very well-equipped North Vietnamese Army units that were some of the best trained soldiers in the world. So these were hardcore warriors that a lot of Vietnam veterans were encountering. In fact, I've talked to triple CIB recipients over the years. What that means is that was somebody that was an infantryman in both World War II, Korea, and Vietnam.
Wow.
And they've told me that of all the enemy forces they opposed, the NVA were the hardest to come up against. So that gives you a little feeling about what the war was like.
One of the things about the terrain in the Ashaw Valley, if you can think of the mountain areas of like Vermont and New Hampshire, except the mountains in that area were much steeper, and the jungle the foliage was so thick that we had to pretty much keep ourselves on ridge lines. You know, we had to walk along a ridge, at the peak of the ridge. And, of course, the enemy knew that, too. So they'd be there waiting for us. And so we run into these ambushes from time to time because there's no place else to go unless you cut your way through, down a steep, almost a cliff-like. Think of yourself on a barn roof, trying to climb up a barn roof. So you walk along the peak of the roof. That's what the terrain was like.
Wow. We had Art in. We had Art in, Richard, when the Ken Burns Vietnam War documentary came out, and so I'm wondering if both of you watched that documentary and if you have any thoughts about it. Richard, I'll ask you first.
Yeah, I definitely have some thoughts about it. I watched every minute of every episode, and to be perfectly honest with you, I wasn't pleased with it. And just to make sure I wasn't alone in this sense, I've contacted, communicated with many, many Vietnam veterans, and they shared the same feelings. They felt like the individuals that were selected to be interviewed, it was fine for them to express their individual opinions, but they didn't reflect the Vietnam veterans that I know. Fortunately, virtually all the Vietnam veterans that I've met, and I've met and talked to a lot of them, being editor of VFW Magazine for 27 years, I've come across a lot. And to the man that I know of, they are not ashamed of what they did in Vietnam. They were proud to wear that uniform. A lot of them would have done it again. And they didn't feel that pride was reflected in that series. It was highly politicized. The series was obviously created with a political agenda, despite...
Richard, I'm going to ask you just to hold your thought. We're coming up on a break, and we'll continue in just a moment with our guests.
We'll be right back. It's 10 minutes before the hour.
I'm Jennifer Kashinka with Your Money Now. Dick's Sporting Goods says it will no longer sell assault-style firearms or high-capacity magazines and will not sell any guns to those under age 21. Dick's CEO Ed Stack says the current systems in place are not effective enough to prevent gun sales to people who are potential threats, and he urged Congress to act. Lowe's posted disappointing profit numbers for the fourth quarter, sending shares down 8% before the opening bell. Healthy comparable store sales at Lowe's is being overshadowed by the profit miss. Lowe's also says it will expand its partnership with Sherwin-Williams,
which will include a new paint desk experience. The Winter Olympics weren't exactly ratings gold for NBC. The games averaged a tick less than 20 million viewers during primetime, a 7% decline from the last Olympics. But NBC says overall viewership numbers helped it turn a profit during the games. On Wall Street, futures are modestly higher. That's your Money Now.
And my friends, 8:51, 9 minutes before the hour of 9 o'clock. If you're thinking about retirement, I want you to call some friends of mine. They're tremendous. Yes, the trusted professionals at the Cowan Tax Group. Individual tax preparation at $199, which includes, listen carefully, all schedules and retirement and investment tax planning. Yes, be proactive and get to the Cowan Tax Advisory Group and let them take care of your problems. They'll get you all straightened out. You'll be absolutely thrilled. I know that. I know them well, and I'm sure many of you do as well. Here's the telephone number to call, 860-676-1100. 860-676-1100, or visit thecowantaxgroup.com.
This is Connoisseur Media's Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette, reminding you that hands-on Hartford's community engagement volunteers perform team-based projects meeting urgent needs of agencies in the Capital Region. Volunteer today at handsonhartford.org.
Juniper Home Care is proudly celebrating its 20th anniversary. Family-owned and operated, Juniper provides nurse supervision, office support, online caregiving resources, and even compensation to care after someone 65 or older currently living in your home. Juniper offers their family caregiving programs statewide. Call 860-523-1418 or visit juniperhomecare.com. Proudly helping people stay at home for over 20 years.
Everyone has something that brings them back to their childhood memories. Maybe it's a song or a place that reminds you of the days you would spend time with your family having breakfast on a Sunday morning. I'm John Pinderis from Effie's Place Family Restaurant. We love to hear how people have grown up with Effie's. As a staple of West Hartford, we offer comfort food, friendly faces, and a home away from home. Stop in today at the recently voted best family restaurant in West Hartford to build your own memories. We're located at 91 Park Road in West Hartford or at effiesplace.net.
Brad, we are back and final minutes with our guests, Richard Kolb and Art Wicknick. Richard, just to finish up then, you thought that the Ken Burns documentary on Vietnam had an agenda to it.
Yes, I most certainly did. And I wasn't the only one that shared that opinion based on a lot of conversations I've had since it aired. I think a lot of Vietnam veterans were frustrated by the tone and the direction of the series, and they just didn't feel that the pride that they have in their service was reflected throughout that series. There's no doubt that it had some fantastic footage, and some of the individuals that were interviewed did really convey the feelings and the thoughts of a lot of Vietnam veterans, but it appeared to me that they tended to stress a handful of individuals that did not reflect the views of most Vietnam veterans. I mean, the Vietnam Veterans Against the War, the VVAW, was an extremely small organization. It got a lot of publicity in the media, because those guys reflected the views of a lot of the people in the media, and they were certainly entitled to those opinions. But what I don't like to see, and what a lot of other Vietnam veterans don't like to see, is those opinions and views portrayed as if they were actually reflected the majority of Vietnam veterans. And I can't help but think that once you walked away from that series, you'd get that opinion.
All right.
One of the things I also like to ask you, Richard, is there any documentary that or movie that kind of captures the essence of the war that at least that you feel about?
Yeah, actually, I think that the two of the best movies, as far as that's concerned, and they didn't try to pursue a political agenda. One of them was actually Hamburger Hill. It really just focused on the daily life of the individual guys. A lot of the actors in it, or most of the actors, weren't well known, but they did a good job of simply portraying the experiences of an average grunt in Vietnam. So I thought it did really good. And the movie that came out later about that starred Mel Gibson about the Battle of the Idrang Valley was good too, because it stayed strictly to the storyline of the battle, and it did not try to politicize it. So those two movies don't get the notoriety that some of the other ones, you know, like Apocalypse Now do, you know, that had an obviously anti-war political agenda.
Right.
So I'd recommend those two movies if you want to see what it was like from the standpoint of the individual veteran.
Gentlemen, we're out of time. Richard, we can't thank you enough. Art, we can't thank you enough. By the way, Rocky Blyer wrote the foreword to the book, Brutal Battles of Vietnam. We'll talk again down the road. Gentlemen, thank you both for being
Thanks
a guest on the program today.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
You bet.
Oh, you're going to be
Take
back.
Care.
This was just
okay.
Fabulous. Yeah. It's just an incredible, incredible story.
Brad, talk about your favorite story, My Pillow.
Thank you. Yes, I will. And again, my dear friends, you have been the ones that have put this product on the map. And we've got the special for you that we've been talking about, 50% off of a four-pack of pillows. That you get two premium MyPillows, two go-anywhere pillows, and they're just incredible. But you know what it is? The company is so happy about the tremendous response that you get 50% off. And all you have to do is go to 800-659-1138. 800-659-1138 and use promo code WDRC. You are going to enjoy these pillows, and I know many of you have given them as gifts. And when your friends get them as a gift, they will be absolutely amazed. 800-659-1135 using promo code WDRC. Daniel, I will certainly see you tomorrow. Dan is going to be with you. The final hour that he does every single day takes you over on the hill. And the good Lord willing, I'll be back with you tomorrow. And until that time, always remember to be good to yourself. You couldn't do it for a better person.